can sense the people are very angry with, you know, the government handling of this crisis.
One form of protest in Hong Kong has not been seen lately, but has been replaced at least temporarily by another. This is Monday, February 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, the first life taken by the Wuhan virus has occurred outside of China. A dispute between the United States and South Korea may soon take away the pay of many Korean workers on military bases there. It's all on today's VOA Asia. For many months, thousands upon thousands of people in Hong Kong have marched and in many instances fought against their local government and its relationship with the Chinese government in Beijing. Much of that has apparently changed over the past few weeks as the Wuhan virus has taken hold of the headlines. Joining us from Hong Kong is Renxin, a correspondent for VOA's Mandarin service. Renxin, how has that situation changed?
The impact is pretty obvious. We're not seeing any organized, large-scale rallies or protests, I think, since January 19. So that was the global sanctions rally, which, of course, ended in clashes between the police and the protesters. So that was the last major protest we have seen. But that doesn't mean the protests are over. In fact, I mean, a lot of people are saying that it's just taking a different form because we're still seeing a lot of protests and the gatherings, which are, some of them are focused on how the government is handling the virus, the Wuhan virus outbreak. This is considered a public health crisis because a lot of people in Hong Kong still remember 2003. The SARS epidemic, in which 299 people died in Hong Kong. So there's actually today I went to a protest. It's a community protest. People are protesting against the government's plan to open a quarantine facility in their community. So one thing they're saying is, first of all, the government did not consult with the local community before they made the plan. The second of all, they are very angry with the government because people in Hong Kong have been calling for the government to close all the border crossings between mainland China and Hong Kong. And also we are seeing a lot of people like lining up for surgical masks. So they're saying like even the government even are not doing a good job in just meet the basic demand of the people.
I have heard, and tell me if I'm wrong, that there was talk of a strike of healthcare workers.
Yes, yes. The healthcare workers union, they had a vote last night. So So most people voted for the strike. So today they demanded the chief executive to sit down and talk with them, but the chief executive said no. So most likely tomorrow, some of the healthcare workers will go on strike. So yeah, that's something, you know, we need to keep an eye on. You can sense the people are very angry with, you know, the government handling of this crisis. And also, a lot of the protesters tell me that this crisis or the outbreak kind of brought together the blue camp and the yellow camp. Because in Hong Kong, the yellow camp means the pro-democracy, anti-government protesters, or people who support the protests. And the blue camp means the people who are pro-government, pro-police. So this, when they go on the street, like to protest against this government plan or the quarantine facility, so you can tell it's people from the local community, and some of them are not in support with of the democracy protest. So people are saying like, hey, well, now we are, it doesn't matter whether you're yellow or blue, so we are all like green. You put blue and yellow together, So it's very interesting. It's a very interesting development because a lot of people from the pro-government citizens are now also dissatisfied with how the government handled this crisis.
What about foreigners who are in Hong Kong? Can they get out? Are they getting out? What's the situation?
Oh, the situation is, I don't have a lot of statistics, but what I heard is some airlines are canceling their flights because pilots who refuse to fly to Hong Kong. So that means there's no returning flight. So people who want to get out of Hong Kong, say like going to the United States on a certain airline, but there's no returning flight. So they are stuck here. But of course, you can go with another airline. You just have to be like, if you can get out of Hong Kong, just do it early. So we don't know what the situation will be like in a few days.
Well, good luck to you. I hope you are healthy and stay that way. Ren Xin is a correspondent for VOA's Mandarin service, joining us from Hong Kong. Make sure you stay with us. Up next on VOA Asia, all of the latest news on the Wuhan virus. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Japan has dispatched a warship to help safeguard the country's oil supplies through the tense but vital waterways in the Middle East. The helicopter destroyer Takanami on February 2nd left its port near Tokyo on assignment to protect merchant ships and oil tankers passing through the Gulf of Oman. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has urged Kazakhstan to join Washington in pressing China over its treatment of Muslim minorities in the Xinjiang region. China's central bank says it will inject 1.2 trillion yuan worth of liquidity into the markets via reverse repo operations on Monday as its stock markets prepare to reopen amid an outbreak of a new coronavirus. This is VOA Asia. China will seek to boost its economy Monday as it battles the impact of the coronavirus outbreak, and in the Philippines, the first death from the virus outside China is reported. David Doyle has more.
China on Sunday ramped up measures to contain the coronavirus epidemic and shore up the economy against its effects, as the first death from the illness was reported outside the country. A 44-year-old Chinese man from Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak, died in the Philippines on Saturday, the Department of Health said.
Of course it's frightening. It really is frightening because the virus will spread.
The Philippines has expanded its travel ban to include all foreigners coming from China, and Beijing is facing mounting isolation as other countries introduce similar travel restrictions. Airlines suspend flights and governments evacuate their citizens. That risks worsening a slowdown in the world's second largest economy. China's central bank said it will inject $173.8 billion worth of liquidity into the markets on Monday as the country prepares to reopen its stock markets following an extended Lunar New Year holiday. As of Sunday, there have been more than 300 coronavirus deaths in China, and the city of Wuhan has been effectively quarantined, with roads sealed off and public transport shut down. State media said one of two new hospitals in Wuhan dedicated to coronavirus patients was completed on Sunday. More than 100 Germans and family members landed in Frankfurt on Saturday after being evacuated from Wuhan, and around 250 Indonesians were evacuated from Hubei province. Japan and Russia will start moving their nationals out later in the week. Cases have been reported in more than two dozen countries, including the United States, Japan, Australia, and Britain. Meanwhile, doctors in Thailand say they have seen success in treating severe cases of coronavirus using a combination of medications for flu and HIV. They said the approach had shown a vast improvement in the conditions of several patients in their care after 48 hours.
That is Reuters' David Doyle reporting. The death toll in China rose by 45 to 304, and the number of cases worldwide claimed past 14,500, according to China's National Health Commission and other nations. The vast majority of those infected are in China. About 150 cases have been reported in two dozen other countries. The U.S. has recorded 8 cases now. With no end in sight to the outbreak, authorities in Hubei and elsewhere have extended the Lunar New Year holiday break due to end this week well into February, trying to keep people at home and reduce the spread of the virus. All Hubei schools are postponing the opening of the new semester until further notice. Despite the drastic travel restrictions at home, China has chafed at those imposed by foreign governments, criticizing Washington's order barring entry to most non-citizens who visited China over the past 2 weeks. Apart from damaging China's international reputation, such steps could worsen a domestic economy already growing at its lowest rate in decades. The Trump administration's national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, said on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday that the Chinese so far have been more transparent, certainly, than in past crises, and we appreciate that, and we continue to offer assistance to the Chinese. But right now, he said, there is no reasons for American to panic. There is something that is a low, this is something that is a low risk, we think, in the United States. Happening now in Asia, North Korea has had no cases of the new coronavirus that's spreading into neighboring China, health ministry officials said on state media Sunday. North Korea has ended most flights with neighboring China and Russia. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. While we're on the subject of Korea, nearly a month after the expiration of a U.S.-South Korea defense cost-sharing agreement, there is growing frustration among South Korean civilians working on U.S. bases who will soon go unpaid if a deal isn't reached. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, there are also concerns the dispute is hurting the alliance.
Camp Humphreys, south of Seoul, is the largest overseas U.S. military base. But many operations here could soon be disrupted over a dispute on how to split the cost of the U.S. military presence. The U.S. military notified Korean employees they may be forced to take unpaid leave starting April 1st. The furlough could affect 9,000 Korean civilians on U.S. bases. That means construction projects and other services may be paused. Many Korean workers say they're looking for other jobs.
Of course, everyone feels unstable and distressed. We hope it doesn't happen. It is our livelihood at stake, after all.
Sun Ji-o works for the USFK Korean Employees Labor Union.
All employees are essential to the mission, so why do we have to be the ones who are suffering?
President Donald Trump has long accused South Korea of not paying enough for U.S. protection. Those accusations make many South Koreans uneasy, especially as the dispute drags on.
It isn't right to hold hostage the salaries of Korean employees just for the sake of the negotiations.
Song Young-gil is a member of South Korea's National Assembly, which must ratify any eventual cost-sharing deal.
For us, we cannot accept the unreasonable demand of $5 billion. We cannot yield to their bluffing.
It's not just South Koreans warning the alliance may be hurt. Even some U.S. officials are asking questions.
This is a part of our message to our State Department colleagues that as you're approaching these negotiations and everyone wants equitable burden sharing, some consideration just needs to be given about maintaining the health of that alliance as we go forward.
U.S. Embassy officials here in Seoul say there's no evidence that the cost-sharing dispute has hurt the U.S.-South Korea alliance. They point to opinion polls suggesting that support for the relationship remains strong. But the big question is, how long will that last? Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Coming your way, U.S. politics. This is VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. As the new virus from China spreads around the world, so has rising anti-Chinese sentiment. Calls for a full travel ban on Chinese visitors and indignities for Chinese and other nations. Ranges from restaurants in South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, and Vietnam refusing to accept Chinese customers. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. The first votes of the 2020 U.S. presidential election will be cast on Monday when the state of Iowa holds its first in the national caucuses. For the past 50 years, America's political parties have used a series of caucuses and primary elections to determine their presidential nominee. VOA's Steve Reddish explains the process.
Imagine holding more than 1,000 meetings all on the same day at the same time. That's what it's like to hold a caucus in a state such as Iowa. Every voting precinct in the state of Iowa has a designated meeting place, such as schools and libraries. On caucus day, people go to those meetings to discuss and declare publicly and openly their support for a particular presidential candidate. The results are tabulated, and delegates are awarded to the candidates according to party rules. Political parties in six states will hold a caucus in 2020: Iowa, Nevada, Kentucky, Hawaii, North Dakota, and Wyoming. Most well known is the Iowa caucus. Since 1972, Iowa has been the nation's first caucus. Its results are dissected, providing the first tangible evidence of support for any of the candidates.
There's no question I've got competitors with a near home field advantage.
Iowa's 2020 caucus will be held on the evening of February 3rd. The focus is on the Democrats because U.S. President Donald Trump, with token opposition, is almost assured the Republican nomination at the party's August convention. Unlike the open nature of a caucus, voting in a primary election is private and done in a voting booth. The votes are tabulated, and delegates are awarded to candidates according to party rules. More than 40 states will hold a primary election in 2020. New Hampshire state law mandates it hold the nation's first primary. This year, it takes place on February 11th. Because they are the first to cast votes, Iowa and New Hampshire attract more attention than more populous, more diverse states with more delegates at stake. A criticism of the current system is that Iowa and New Hampshire are overwhelmingly white. Presidential hopefuls spend months commuting between the two states, visiting restaurants, state fairs, and town hall meetings in an effort to meet as many voters as possible. For the candidates who survive Iowa and New Hampshire, their next big test is March 3, 2020, known as Super Tuesday, because of the number of states that hold primaries on that day, 14. Among them, America's two most populous states, California and Texas. About 30% of the delegates for each party's convention are at stake on Super Tuesday. Primary elections continue through the first week of June. Usually, one candidate clinches the nomination earlier than that, making the party convention in the summer a crowning moment, along with the naming of the candidate's choice of a vice president. But if no candidate clinches the nomination during the caucuses and primaries, a contested convention would produce a summer political drama. Steve Reddish, VOA News.
This news break from VOA Asia. Cambodia's leader urged people Thursday to remain calm about the new virus from China while threatening to kick out reporters or officials seen wearing a face mask. Prime Minister Hun Sen said in a televised address that people should not be scared because the real illness they faced was fear based on inaccurate information on social media. The Republican-majority U.S. Senate defeated a Democratic attempt Friday to call new witnesses in the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. That defeat, but all brings deliberations in the trial to a close, with senators expected to acquit Trump of two charges, including allegations that he abused the power of his office by leveraging USAID to Ukraine to benefit his own personal political interest. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Democrats tried and failed.
Mr. Moran. No.
To call additional witnesses they said would support their case. Trump abused the power of the presidency and obstructed Congress's efforts to investigate his actions.
What we are asking you to do on behalf of the American people is simple. Use your sole power to try impeachment by holding a fair trial. Get the documents they refuse to provide to the House. Here are the witnesses they refuse to make available to the House, just as this body has done in every single impeachment trial until now. Let the American people know that you understand they deserve the truth.
That push for new witnesses accelerated earlier this week with revelations from John Bolton's book. The former national security advisor claiming Trump personally told him U.S. aid to Ukraine was tied to investigations into political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter.
John Bolton could corroborate the rest of our evidence and confirm the president's guilt. So today, senators, we come before you and we argue again that you let this witness and the other key witnesses we have identified come forward so you have all of the information available to you when you make this consequential decision.
But the president's attorneys argued House impeachment managers should have done the work of interviewing witnesses during their investigation, not in the Senate trial.
That's not the way that this chamber should allow impeachments to be presented to it.
Trump denies the Bolton allegations and has maintained the loyalty of Republican senators who said the hold on Ukraine aid was temporary and so could not be an impeachable offense.
They got the money. There was no investigation of the Bidens. Is this the conduct, even though inappropriate, that shakes the foundation of a democracy? I say not.
Republican Senators Mitt Romney and Susan Collins did join with Democrats in the push for witnesses, but that ultimately was not enough for a move an overwhelming majority of Americans said they wanted to happen.
The president may have won the battle. Some men may have won the battle. As the truth comes out in the days ahead, and it will, they will lose the war.
The Senate delayed the final vote that will either acquit Trump of the charges or remove him from office until next week.
The motion is not agreed to.
Senators set to give final speeches explaining their vote Monday, the same day as the Iowa caucuses, the first nominating contest in the 2020 presidential election, with a final vote set for Wednesday, just a day after Trump gives his State of the Union speech to Congress. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
This is Science in a Minute.
Earlier this week, LEO Labs, a company that monitors orbiting satellites, tweeted that they were observing two satellites that were approaching each other so closely that they could possibly collide with each other. There was real concern that a collision of the two satellites would produce thousands of pieces of small space debris, adding to the nearly 1 million pieces of tiny to very large bits of space junk now orbiting the Earth. The company later predicted that the satellites would make their closest approach to each other and possibly collide above Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on January 29th at 23:39 UTC. In the early morning of January 30th, LEO Labs tweeted that in the first several radar passes of the two objects after the close approach, there was no evidence of new debris, suggesting that the satellites didn't crash after all. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.